You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
A club isn't the best place to find a lover, so the bar is where I go. Me and my friends sat at the table doing shots, tripping fast and then we talk slow. Come over and start up a conversation with just me, and trust me, I'll give it a chance. Now take my hand, stop, and the man on the jukebox, and then we start to dance. And now I'm singing like, girl, you know I want your love. Your love was handmade for somebody like me. Come on now, follow my lead. I may be crazy, don't mind me. Say, boy, let's not talk too much.
My boy Ed Sheeran, my boy Muscleman, joins me from Texas. What's up, Tex? What are you doing?
What's going on, man? I was just watching some videos.
Of what?
Just shit. It's just funny stuff, you know, like people busting their, you know, people being stupid.
People falling on the ice and things like that?
Yeah, just, like I said, people being just stupid, man.
Oh, really? What's,
you know, why would you?
Give us a sample of what you were doing.
They're called fails. So, you know, when people are just being stupid, you know, like, where'd it go? There was one that it was like, it made you just kind of wonder, like, why the hell people, would do stuff like this, you know? Like truckers, it was one that the truckers getting brake checked. So when truckers get behind cars and then the cars hit the brakes, you know, thinking that the, you know, I don't, like, what it goes through your mind? You just cut this truck off and then he's following too close to you because you cut him off. And then what do? You hit your brakes.
That's right.
To get him off your ass.
Yeah, I'm not gonna, you think I'm gonna take that kind of aggression from a truck?
Yeah, he's 100 times heavier. It takes him 100 times longer to stop.
It's the principle, man. I demand my respect.
Yeah. Or they just pull right in front of the truck on the on-ramp.
What does that sound like? That sounds like a troop information session with your Marines. What are you talking about? Yeah, sir, I demand my respect. I'm not going to be made a punk out. No truck's going to make a punk out of me. Okay.
Yeah.
What happened to your Celica? Oh, it looked like a beer. It looked like a beer cancer, and even worse, I think I'm at fault, so my insurance is going to jam me. Yeah. Okay. All right. Did you get your respect, though? Yes, sir. I did. I got my respect. I got my respect.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let us know.
Oh, so this chick, the one I just watched.
Yeah.
This chick in a car, a Toyota Celica or something, was going to use that cut in the freeway that says, you know, authorized vehicles only, to do a U-turn on the freeway.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, of course. Come on.
Yeah. So
ask me ask me if I've ever used it.
Oh, we all have.
No.
But we're not stupid about it where we just come flying across traffic and then slow down and almost brake in front of a semi in this fast lane and try and use it.
No.
Well, what happened was, her car became a third smaller in size, and she got pushed into the guardrail.
Yeah, that's not how you do that.
Lucky to be alive.
That's so who's filming these truckers?
Yeah, they're truckers' cams. So, what? Now this guy wants to play road rage with a semi and get in front of them and then hit the brake.
Well, you want to know why? Because they're all Russians that are driving trucks now. The whole truck industry has been taken over by Russians.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah. So they bring the videos with them because you got to have a video in Russia, man.
Either you're nobody in Russia. You're nobody normally, but if you don't have a video, you're nobody, nobody. You're double nobody.
Yeah, and if you ever want to watch some funny videos,
yeah,
watch Russian dash cams. Type that in. Russian dash cams. When you come home at night after working and you're like, God damn, people are stupid on the road. No, type in Russian dash cams and watch those idiots. And you will put it, it'll put everything in perspective with you, and you're like, whoa, okay.
We're not that stupid after all.
It ain't that bad.
It ain't that bad.
Yeah. It ain't that bad.
Okay, I've got a couple. I get an email at, let's see, what time did my phone buzz? 9 hours ago. So it would have been midnight. Okay. So I get my phone buzzes at midnight. Mac, can you ask the gunner how a grunt can teach his wife / fiance how to shoot? I have a unique situation. My fiance is a retired gunny's daughter, and he failed to teach her proper weapons manipulation and fundamentals of marksmanship. Shame on him. She is very outgoing, but I feel my style of instruction might be a bit brash. I don't want to send her to a course. Can you help me teach my woman firearms? Much thanks. Then a P.S. She can already shoot paper, as in the entire target, LOL. Should I set up a few periods of instruction for marksmanship or just boot her off? The more I think about it, I might not be the right guy. Whoa, back the truck up, man. She's a gunny's she's a gunny's daughter. Give her a chance, man. And Mike, let me just tell you.
Okay, so
you came to the right dude because Mike has skinned this bear and he will make you smart. Stand by targets.
This is an easy one, man. Come on. You know, a gunny's daughter. She's young, so I mean, she's got that going for her. Dude, I've taught everything here now from, you know, teenagers up to women that use basically a walker to get around. And, you know, it's the style. So, you know, one thing he leaves out, if you're going to ask a question like this, you got to add the information. Like, this is the gun that she's shooting currently. How tall is she? And reason I say tall, because I don't want to know her weight, but what's her height?
He could throw that in. He could throw that in.
Yeah. That way I know basically what size, you know, we're talking about as far as body frame and everything. So
what difference does that make? Oh, in gun recommendations?
Hands.
Okay.
Yeah, hands. You know, again, women have tend to have smaller hands.
Right.
So it's about grip placement, you know, and where their hands are at. And then, like we talked about, and then what kind of gun? Because, you know, I have this discussion all the time.
45.
With the hide over bore thing.
Oh, yeah. Explain that. Explain the hide over bore thing, because I put a picture up of hide over bore one day.
Well, it's simply.
Whoa. Okay, so what about her going to a class? If you can find a dude that teaches like Mike teaches, that makes it fun and makes her smart and she feels confident, you know, that way you
there's
don't...
not a lot of guys like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I know. I'm not
saying that to...
I know. Pump your own tire.
No, I'm not trying to say that to, like, but I've seen other people instruct, and it's like, you know, it's not like that. So, I mean, I'm not saying I'm not the only one. It's just hard to find somebody like that. But, you know, what kind of, don't worry about shooting paper. Hell, if she's hitting the paper, she's fine. You know, I always tell people to get away from targets. Targets are the worst thing that a shooter can shoot at. And the reason being is because they focus on the center. They focus on, like, the X-ring, you know. And it drives me absolutely crazy when people are focused on the X, because if you're focused on the X, you're not focused on anything else. So I always tell people, just go to Costco and buy, you know, the big pack of paper plates, you know, the hard cardboard type.
Yeah.
And shoot those. But those, you go get a 2x2, a bunch of 2x2s, get the warped ones from Lowe's. They'll give them to you at a discount. Cut them in half, because I think they're 8 foot. So now you got a 4 foot post. Staple the plate onto those white, you know, the more white side facing you. And you can get those plates in any size from really like 8 inches and maybe even smaller, like the little dessert plates, six inches, all the way up to a foot.
Do you like the cardboard, like, Chinette plate? A little bit more substance
to it? Those are good.
Yeah, I like those. I like eating off those better.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah.
But the plates are the best, man, because, I mean, they one, they're cheap. Two, you can, shoot really close. You're not going to get, don't worry about ricochets. It's a good target me. But it's also in reference to where you want to shoot, like, vital areas. So if you take, like, an 8-inch plate and you put that over your torso, like center mass of your chest,
right,
and you look at it, and it's like, man, if I get shot anywhere in this 8-inch circle, that's going to hurt that. Like, I might die. Yeah. So 8-inch is good. 6-inch is even better, but, start off big, come in small. But practice on those things. Get away from targets. Get away from scoring rings, because that freaks people out. Shoot at paper. Just draw a dot in there and say, hit this dot.
So draw a dot on the paper. Why wouldn't you be happy hitting the paper if it's only 8 inches?
Well, you would be. But if you still want to get around, if you're shooting a rifle or something, you want to zero it.
Oh, okay.
Put a dot in there.
Yeah, because let me just tell you, if you shoot at the X's, that's the surest way to make it unfun. And to me,
So Mike, the
first step is, if you're going to teach her yourself, okay, shit can the TMI program, okay? All right, in the spirit of instruction, I am Gunnery Sergeant Muscle Moon. You are the shootee. I will give instruction.
Yeah, we get it.
You will adjust. That's not fun, okay? So you're going to kill the relationship. If you ever want to get out of a relationship, you might want to take her shooting and do that, because that will end it. The key thing is to make her fun. Email question. Hey, Mac, ask the gunner about static line shooting. I think it's bullshit. Ever see anybody do static line shooting when they actually have to shoot? Is there a trick in terms of walking and then using the weapon? Is it a progression thing? Crawl, walk, walk fast, trot, run? Thoughts? Michael?
Okay, so is he referring, when he says static line, is he referring to not moving?
Yeah, the kind of like got the pistol on the bench in front of you, grab it, shoot, put it down, as opposed to a little bit, at least that's how I read it.
So, yeah, because I was, static line, it would just be stationary.
Right.
Static line shooting is, you're jumping on an airplane, static line, and then shooting from a parachute.
No.
That's pretty advanced shit.
I know, we're not talking airborne, we're talking like normal human stuff.
So he's saying, read the thing again. Is it stupid? Is he saying?
Is it stupid?
Or a statement. It's more like a statement.
Yeah, it's a statement. No, what he's asking you for your thoughts on that kind of static line shooting. Or as you progress, do you have people shoot from like a walk?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Or do you like throw them on the ground and say, get up and shoot? Do you like spin them in a circle and say, okay, now shoot? What do you do?
No, I mean, so stationary shooting, where you're just standing facing target,
right,
that's great to build the fundamentals, like how to draw from the holster, how to face your target. You can look at grip and stance. You can look at things. You can identify those things. Once they start moving, it's much harder. So you want to establish a good foundation first before you even start getting into it. Manipulating drills, where you're changing targets, or they're shooting multiple targets, they're on the move, they're shooting from barricade, all of that stuff. Because then it's really hard to see if they're doing the fundamental stuff correct. So always start with, stationary shooting, then work your way past that, And it's a thing that, people always tell me, where should I stop? Never. There's always different skill sets, low light, no light, all sorts of things. Bailout type drills. I mean, you could do everything. Tons of stuff.
There was a field, I've told the story before, but I'll tell it again, but there was a field in Reynolds, North Dakota, and It had berms on three sides, and it kind of sloped downward, and it wound up being a great place to shoot. And so it doesn't take farmers long to start throwing washing machines, dryers. There was, like, stuff to shoot all over this place. So, I took my sons out, and they were both in high school. And I taught them how to shoot their whole life, and we have a certain way that we set up ranges and things like that. But make a little obstacle course. And, okay, you got to get up, you got to sprint to this, you got to dive over this, you got to come up, and within 2 seconds, you got to engage that target, right? Then you got to roll out over here, you got to do this, you got to jump, right? You got to run over here, you got to hit the ground, you got to get up on a knee and shoot and engage this target. And you talk about fun, right? But again, you got to ensure it's safe, and you got to teach them, and it's a building block thing. But they used to love doing that. Because when they started, they didn't hit shit. It's not easy with your heart pumping and having to not get up and take 15 seconds to sight in and calm yourself down to get up and engage from either the prone, the kneeling, or standing. And they learned a lot more. It reinforced all the basics. And, Mike, I'd love to hear you comment. This is just me. It reinforced all the basics about breathing, sight picture, all that stuff. When you begin to make it go a little bit faster, and it became more interesting, and it really then made them go back and focus on the basics more and pay attention to the basics more. I'd be curious about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, people ask me all the time, when is the time to progress? You'll know. I mean, when you're sustained at that level where you're not getting any better, you're still really good. Not getting better, then progress, take it up a notch. But it comes down to, it's like building a house. You don't start building the house until the foundation's cured. So it's the whole process of making sure that you got a great sounding, a great basis to start off of, a good foundation. Because if you don't, right, if you just kind of nickel and dime it, well, then you're not, as you progress, you're going to start doing things wrong. And if you don't have that basic stuff to draw from, then yeah. So I always tell people, be cautious. Don't rush it. Take time. Do the right thing and it'll come. I mean, you'll know. But yeah, I love that stuff. I mean, anytime where you can ratchet up, and make it a little bit more difficult, it's wonderful. Because I've always seen, I see guys that are like, oh, I can shoot the antenna off a bee. And, yeah, but how long does it take you to do that? 5 minutes? Perfect conditions?
From a bench.
So when you sit, so when you say, okay, let's see how good of a shot you are. Do this, this, and this, and this, and this, and then they don't even hit the target. And then their excuse is, well, I don't do that. I'm not trained for that. Well, then don't become comfortable with being in the basics. Branch out, do things, make it more difficult for you.
I'm with you.
Wonderful thing.
Next question. Hey, Mac, Gunner was in first LAR. Did he go to LA for the riots? Did you go to LA for the riots?
No, I was at 5th Marines. That was way before.
Way before your LA?
Yeah, I was in.
Your light armored career?
Huh?
Right, way before your light armored career?
Yeah, it was like, in the early 90s, 92, 93. So I was at 5th Marines. So I was at 1-5. I was at San Mateo.
We were talking about pro bono and the guard, or the military being used on the border, and there's a reason that the National Guard units are used for that, the whole posse comitatus thing. And so it got me to thinking, like, well, okay, so what's the process that the president, that active duty troops get used? And it's the whole posse comitatus thing. They have to be, the president has very deliberately they have to be requested. The president then has to make a series of proclamations and announcements, and it goes back to, the Revolutionary War. So, very, very, very kind of interesting, but.
Well, the reason that the Marines were called out during the LA riots was the California National Guard was part of the looting.
What a jackass, man. Why would you say that?
Because there's... I'll send you a picture.
Shut
You've
up.
You've never seen that?
Just
You've never seen,
shut
like,
it.
Okay. All right. I'm not going to say any more. Pictures, you're going to go, what the hell?
Exactly. Exactly. The, I was talking about that little bit ago. So, have you ever done any missions down to the border?
Oh, yeah.
What
mine were all, drug.
You were all drug. But your presence there was deliberate as part of, like all those drug, interdiction operations were still presence, kind of presence patrols, yes?
Sure.
No?
I can't talk about it. Not on the radio. Are you kidding me?
Why? We all did them. The federal government paid for them. You're chartering the black helicopter?
Mac, you see the difference, back then, there was a lot of different stuff going on. So you were an officer doing it. If you did it, you were at some headquarters, some COC.
COC. No, it was my company. It was my company doing it. It was awesome.
What did you do? What part did you do?
The drug interdiction piece.
Where at?
Let's see. It was off, where Warner Springs is?
Okay, yeah, completely different. We're talking different stuff here.
Oh, where were you? Were you in Mexico City?
No. I was on the border.
Yeah, thank you. And you were just doing the same shit, interdicting drugs. But that's not what you were doing. Just by coincidence, when we did this, it was on known immigration routes and things like that. So you were a presence. You were something there. Now, Mike can't talk about his because it's too classified. But and we all respect that. We all respect classified information. What are the perils of it?
Because when we were down there, we were down there at the same time when the kid was killed, Mexican national, by U.S. service members on the border in the gunfight.
Yeah, explain. Do you remember the incident?
Yeah, can't talk about that.
What do you mean you can't talk about it?
Whatever's on the news. Yeah, whatever's on the news. Yeah, publicly. Whatever came out publicly.
Oh, but you can't talk about what you know privately.
Mac, doesn't say there's... I don't even know how to say this. Like, what if there's an accidental incursion into a sovereign country? That's a big deal, right?
Hypothetically,
yeah. Big deal.
But they're not accidental, and it's not hypothetical. They do it all the time.
Right. That's why let's talk about something different.
Let's talk about that incident, though. One of the things that happened was Marines were near the border, and the story goes, young, I want to say is 16 years old.
He's real young.
He's shot at Marines, and...
Army.
No,
there's Rangers. The Rangers are down there too.
But I thought it was Marines that killed the kid.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm confused. Yeah. Now you got me thinking. Okay, so just drop the whole Ranger thing.
All right. Okay, let me find the story. Marine to be charged in border shooting. This is 1997. Texas authorities say they will seek murder charges against a Marine suspected of killing a teenager in a border confrontation. Corporal Clemente Balanuez is accused of shooting and killing Ezekiel Hernandez, 18, last month. Military officials say that Banuelos, a member of a four-man surveillance team. So this is the incident. Yeah, this is the incident we're talking
about. An armed surveillance team. He wasn't an unarmed civilian.
Lesser charges will be brought against three other Marines who were on the same patrol. Military officials said a member of the four-man surveillance team had shot Mr. Hernandez after he twice fired at the Marines who were watching a suspected drug route at the request of the Border Patrol. The military said Mr. Hernandez raised his 22-caliber rifle for a third shot when the Marine opened fire. The shooting was in self-defense.
The thing that pisses me off is they did not know it was a 22 until after he's dead and we went to and looked at his body. You can't make an assumption. I mean, it doesn't matter. When someone's shooting at you and bullets are going by, caliber doesn't have, you know, oh, he's only shooting with a 22, so. No, you don't know that. He's shooting at you.
Yeah. I don't know too many people that say, when they get shot at, hey, what caliber was that? And that's
yeah.
Like,
gotta be 223 or higher, boys, for us to shoot back.
Yeah. So when somebody's out there with a pellet gun or something like that, like, you don't know.
Yeah.
Now, maybe if you're experienced, you'll know by the sound that, like, that's a pellet gun and you don't respond. But that's a guy with a little bit of experience or a girl with a little bit of experience. The New York Times story goes on. In Washington, protesters called for the military to keep the military from the border where soldiers help fight drug smuggling. But even as protesters raised signs urging an end to military terror against civilians, the House approved a measure that could station as many as 10,000 troops along the border to combat illegal immigration and drug trafficking. That was in 1997 on June 22nd. So,
was that long ago?
Yeah. But that incident is the incident that ended much of these kind of patrols that we're talking about.
Yeah, that killed them.
Yeah, because there was a lot of stuff. Like I didn't mine in 1993, and I'll tell you what, it was awesome training. You got helicopters to support you. You know, you were going. We were patrolling known infiltration routes and looking for pot farms that farmers would plant adjacent to their land, because if they planted them on their land, you could get your land confiscated. So what they did was they pushed the pot into onto federal land, in this case a national park, and the going rate of a mature marijuana plant was, I want to say, $2,300 a plant.
Yeah.
So, you know, get yourself 1,000 plants. Get yourself 2 500 plant orchards, and you're pretty well set. It was the largest cash crop in California when my guys went and did that. And you fly to El Paso, which is just, oh my God, miserable. Go to Fort Bliss down there and old cavalry post. And you go to all the briefings and all the rest of that stuff. And then I came back to 29 Palms, and my regimental commander was Buck Bedard. So Neller's my battalion commander. So we're walking over to do the confirmation brief, and Neller looks at me and says, "Don't be a smart ass to Colonel Bedard." I said, "Sir, why would I?" He said, "Shut up. You heard me." I said, "Yes, sir." So I do the brief, and Bedard's like sitting there, and it was a good brief too, Mike. There was nothing in the brief that I gave him that he could fuck me up on. And so at the end of it, he looks at me and goes, "Very good, Captain McNamara." I said, "Thank you, sir." He said, "Have you thought about using mules?" I said, "What?" I didn't say what.
Well, they wanted to, do mules bad.
So, yeah, so he wanted, so I said, "Well, sir, we're using helicopters. Nobody's ever told me that mules were available. And so I have to plead ignorance, with you. If that's all right, I'd be happy to investigate it." He said, "Well, let me ask a few questions and then I'll get back to you." And with that said, Neller jumped in. He said, "So you got anything else for Mac?" He said, "Cause I have a couple things for you relative to this." And he said, "No." And then Neller said, "All right, you're dismissed." I said, "Yes, sir." And left. And, but I got through my briefing with Uncle Buck, and that was the last thing before we left. But it was no, it was great training. You patrolled with live rounds, and you know, it was actually pretty cool training for if you took a company out there, and it was awesome. So my Marines enjoyed
it. Yeah, we worked out of White Sands, Air Force Base.
Oh, really? That's out in the middle of nowhere, man. Holy smokes. We worked at Warner Springs is the Sears School. And we were there for maybe 2 days before they brought a group of aviators in to do the Sears School thing. And I told these guys, I said, hey, if you don't give my Marines a class and show them what you do, they're going to jump the fence. I'm going to tell you, I'll do my best to prohibit it. But they're inquisitive, and when you start your music and stuff like that, they're going to have a look, okay?
Right.
So, oh, my God, you should hear this shit. They let off with I don't know if it was Vietnamese or Chinese music, and it went on all night. And they found most of these guys. They let them loose, and they found most of these guys within 3 or 4 hours. There was a couple that took them longer. But they knew all the hiding spots, and then they bring them into the prison, and then they do what they do in there. And so pretty cool. They came and they gave us a tour. They talked about all the safety measures they have in there. There's a physician there at all times when they're doing this, and he's observing, and when they're waterboarding, and they showed us how they did it. You know, they waterboarded a Marine in front of all of us. You know, you asked for I'll volunteer, you know, skin a rabbit, all the rest of the stuff that you hear there. Did you ever go through Sears School?
Yeah, at Warner Springs. You're the same one you're talking about.
Yeah, so it was
okay.
It was okay. Dude, tell me about it.
No, you know, I never really got, like, I don't know. It never really, the one up there never really got to me, like, it was kind of bullshit, man. I mean,
yeah, it's not good.
I mean, yeah, it sucked. It wasn't hard. It was, I mean, once you realize basically you're not going to pass, you know, they're going to get you to talk. I don't know. My experience with it at first was really kind of negative because they were just assholes.
Well, you didn't buy it.
Yeah, I didn't buy the whole, I mean, it was cool. There were some things that were really cool, like the survival stuff and,
right,
you know, navigation stuff. But, like the whole, I get the whole code of conduct. I really did. But
you,
just,
Mike,
the way they
explain that because
the
a lot,
information from you.
Explain that because a lot of people might not get the whole code of conduct piece. These schools go back to the Korean War and the extraction of information from prisoners of war and post-Korean War. We found out that we didn't really train anybody to be captured and what you can give up and what's important and what's not important. And so as a result, you know, you had guys come back, be not only mentally damaged and physically damaged, you know, for the rest of their lives. And, you know, you had incredible strife in that whole event.
Well, these schools were designed after Vietnam. So after the Hanoi Hilton incident, where we had really good examples, people that resisted, people that would, you know, go through this whole thing. And then we had people that sold out other people. So then the schools, the code of conduct has been around for a long time, but, the whole, you know, the six articles of the code of conduct, and, you know, so basically what they all tell you is, you know, first one, you know, I'm American fighting man, fighting in forces, guard my country, you know, prepared to give my life in the defense. And then the other ones after that, I will become big, like, you know, if I will never surrender my own free will. If in command, I will never surrender the members of my command, as long as they have the means to resist. And then the ones that if I'm captured, I will continue to resist by all means. And where they get into this is like, continue to resist by all means available. You know, so it's really hard for, you know, when there's no means available, pretty hard to resist. You'll make every effort to escape. That means and aid others in escape. You know, so that kind of thing. You'll never accept parole, nor special favors. So when they say, hey, if you do this, we'll give you extra food, and you say yes, well, then you just violated the code of conduct. You obey orders. And so if Mac's in charge of the camp, God forbid us, you got to listen to him.
That would be a locked on camp, boys. Be a locked on camp. And we're all escaping, too.
When questioned,
no individual.
You're required to only give the name, rank, and service number and date of birth. And you want to avoid all other questions. Now, again, like in Warner Springs, they just trick you. And it's the same thing. I mean, I get it. But, you know, it's not like the movies where you're standing there, you're sitting there, and you're like, name, John Doe, 123456, United States Army. Boom, you get hit. John Doe. No. And you start taking pain, it's like, whoa. Your body is like, okay, wait a second. We got to stop this pain somehow because this is not good. You know, I don't know what the rules are now, but on the waterboarding stuff, the waterboarding, the electrocution, I think the hardest part was the deprivation, the sleep, the food. They put you in a box that you can't lay down. You're always up in an up position. So you can never really sleep. And then once you start falling asleep, you know, they get you up. But it's just constantly, you know, what's kind of nice is the fact that when you're a prisoner in captivity in that kind of realm anyway, keep it busy. So like, you go out and do working parties, do menial shit around, you know, rake rocks or pick up brush, and you know, it's fun. After a while, you're like, man, I can't wait tomorrow to get rake rocks. Because it takes your mind away, you know. It gets you out of there. It gets you doing something.
But the point of the school is that they are going to break you, right? And
yeah, they're just going to break you. And it's a matter of knowing what that break, where you're going to break at. Don't go, yeah, the guys that go in playing tough guy, like watching too many Rambo movies,
right.
Shit, they first ones to break. Always. And then, you know, I remember there are men crying, weeping. You're like, dude, these guys are U.S. civilians. Some of them are military. Most of them are civilians, but they can't kill you. Yes, it's going to hurt, but in the end, you're not going to die. You're going to feel like you're going to die, but they can't kill you.
They'll get in trouble.
Yeah. You'll be fine. Believe me. Just put it up with it. Suck it up.
And there he goes. Mike Musselman. What in the hell is he doing? Yeah, I never went through the camp. Aviators go through the camp.
That was weird.
That's like the second day in a row it's happened.
No, I went to wipe my keyboard. As soon as I wiped my keyboard, you hung up. I didn't.
What do you mean I hung up? I didn't hang up. I would just hear that on a nightly basis. They would start the music, and you could hear them yelling, and you could hear the whole thing going on. And you're just
You want to piss them off? Sing a tune to that music.
How could you? It was, what kind of music was it, Mike? It was just foreign.
It was Vietnamese. It was like,
Vietnamese? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
It went on for hours and hours and hours and hours. It was interesting. Email. I want Gunner to go back to teaching your wife how to shoot. I'll venture to say that it was prudent for him not to go the TMI route, yes? So is the first requirement teach basic safety and make it fun if you're going to do it yourself? So, yeah, Mike, give some advice if guys are going to do it themselves.
Okay. First of all, don't do it yourself. but if you have to, here's the music, Mac, real quick. Can you hear this?
Turn it up.
Here, there it is. Can you hear it?
Yeah. Loud, too.
Yeah, that's good.
Relax.
So tips number one, safety rules. Don't, if you look at safety rules, there's some people have two, some people have one, some people have 10. I go with the 4. And I've kind of changed them a little bit from the Marine Corps' perspective because I don't like the words, treat all guns as if. I say treat all guns as they're loaded, as knowing that they're loaded. So all guns are loaded. Every gun is loaded. Rule number one.
Okay.
So rule number two is keep your fingers straight and out the trigger until you're ready to fire. Number three, never point your weapon at anything you're not willing to destroy. Not kill. You can't kill a sofa or a plasma TV, but you can destroy them, and you can destroy someone's life. So never point the weapon at anything you're not going to destroy. So if you're in your home and you're by yourself and there's no one else in the house and you decide to clean your pistol by pointing it at your TV and it goes off, well, then that's your TV. That was your call. But I'm never going to point at anything I'm not going to ruin and destroy. And then number four is know your target. Know your target and what's beyond it and what's to the left and right of it. So when you're shooting, always look at, don't look at just where your target's at, because like I've told in my classes, it can be a great shoot. You could be totally justified in taking someone's life. But if you miss that shot and that shot goes wide, it goes past your target and strikes an innocent civilian, everything is lost. So good intentions is not going to bail you out of jail. So keep with those four, safety, and then start building off that stuff, and then go through the whole, but see, that's why I say it's really difficult, because what I do is I find a gun initially that they like, that they'll take to, and then we work off of that, and then we'll do, how to hold the gun, you know, and that may take days. How to load the gun. You know, using snap caps like we talked before on the show.
Right.
You know, dummy ammunition. And going through that drill. But see, women sometimes, they don't understand the need for being repetitive. You know, so my wife starts looking at me and she does it one time. And she looks at me and I said, what? Do you want a attaboy? She's like, no, I'm done. And I said, no, you did it one time. She's like, what? And I said, this is called repetitive training. You can do it again and again and again and again. And she's like, well, when do we stop? And I said, when you can do it blindfolded. When you can do it, you know, without even thinking about it. Or talk me through the steps. Just without even looking at the gun, walk me through them. And then they're like, well, okay, so we haven't done it long enough. You know, so she's always... I'll hand her a gun, and I'll test her. You know, it's like when I first started doing it, I'd hand her a gun, and she'd pick it up, and then she'd, like, aim in at something. I said, what are you doing? She's like, what? And I said, you didn't check to see if the gun was loaded. She's like, but you did. No. The mentality you want to have is that I pick up a gun, I check to see if it's loaded. I remove the source of ammunition, I pull the slide back to the rear, I visually and physically check the chamber. And then once I know it's clear, I say it to myself, clear. And then I put the gun down. If I take the gun out of my possession and I release it from my hand, but I still can see it and I pick it back up, I clear it again. I lost control of the gun. And so, and people were like, that's crazy. No, that's good training. Because, you know, then you start making rules of, oh, if it's, as long as I can see it, well then, okay, what if you're talking and someone distracts you for that minute, or that, you know, how long does it take to load a gun? Or something else happens, or a child comes in. You know, so as long as, my thing is, once you lose physical control over it, you've lost control. So you pick it up again and you clear it again. So she knows now never put the gun down because I make her clear it every time she puts it down. But then we go through hand, sight alignment, you know, and I use, so if you can do this right now, how I teach sight alignment really well is take your right hand. Okay? You doing it? Matt?
Yeah.
Take your right hand.
Okay.
Stick out your index finger and your middle finger. So you're making a peace sign. Right?
Index finger and middle finger. Yes, I'm making a peace sign.
So you're making a peace sign.
Where's my thumb? Straight up?
Well, don't worry about it. Just stick those two fingers out. I didn't say anything about thumb. Jesus. So now you're making the peace sign.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Fold them. Fold them at the joint. So now you got a mini peace sign.
Yeah. I got a miniature. I got a midget peace sign.
Okay. That's your rear side app, your rear sight. Okay?
Yes.
Just leave it like that. Don't touch it. Leave it.
Okay.
Turn it off to your side.
All right.
Take your index finger on your left finger.
Okay.
Fold it in half.
All right.
Now you got a front sight post.
Okay.
Now take your rear sight and your front sight and make a good sight picture. Remember, you want them even across the top and equal distance in between.
Nice.
And what you can do there is then you can say, okay, if my front sight post is lower, my gun's going to shoot what? And they're like, they can see it. They can visually see it. They're like, oh, it's going to shoot lower. And if my front sight post is higher, I'm going to shoot higher. And if my front sight post is more to the right, I'm going to shoot more to the right. Oh, I get it. Head explodes. But that's how you start, you know, and that's how you do that thing. You know, mini peace sign with the right knuckles, front sight post. That's how you teach front sight, front side alignment. And what's nice about that, it's big enough so when you're looking at it as an instructor, you can, like, look over their shoulder and see what they're doing. So that's the kind of stuff that you do. You know, you're training that kind of stuff, side alignment, grip, stance, trigger follow through, you know. There's a whole myriad of tasks. But before we even shoot, before even the live round goes downrange, and then we start off small.
You know, but again, I think that 22. You can see here Mike making it fun. I think that is... I think if you don't do that, that's women just say, hey, I'm done with this. First of all, I'm not one of your Lance Corporals, so don't treat me like...
Don't talk to me like I'm one of your Marines.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah. And Mike deals with that with his wife, but slowly but surely, you know, I won't say slowly but surely, because Mike's a funny guy. But I think that yeah, it has to be safe, and I think you lay out the rules of safety and things you teach them. But it also has to be something that they can embrace and something that they can enjoy. How much fun have you had with – in fact, you just had lunch, what, last Saturday with women that want to talk about what's next for your the shooting
thing?
Oh, no,
that was just Tuesday.
So what came out of it? What do they want to do next?
We're gonna keep ramping it up and then challenging even more. And, you know, and keep going at it a little harder. So we'll do a very fine job.
So would it give me a...
No, I mean, it's just going to be, you know, we're going to keep doing it. See what we can do. And where we can take it. But there's a lot of women that want to do some advanced stuff. So we'll go from there.
That's cool.
But they like it.
I mean, it's got to be a good feeling for you, though, that, you know, volunteering your time and then, and has how well they've taken to it, yes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I look at volunteering my time, hell yeah, because, you know, you can easily charge. At least $100 a session for women. You know, that'd be $3,500 to $4,500 a day. Easy. But it's free. And what I get out of it is, again, it's a great feeling to see these women really come out of their shell. just the immense amount of confidence boost and, you know, situational awareness and the self-esteem, everything. They're comfortable. They no longer fear, they no longer have to, like, fear things. They can sort things out themselves.
Courtesy of Michael Musselman. Well done. Well done. Now, will you expand the program?
I don't know.
Well, all right.
Yeah, we'll see. Everything's kind of, we'll see. I mean, some women here in the neighborhood want me to do it with just the neighbors.
So demand for the program is good?
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
I like
and
that.
Like I said, you got to be careful because then it's a business.
Do you want it to be a business?
No.
Oh.
You know, if someone else was just as qualified or pretty close and I could help them out and I'll make them the figurehead and I go, I'll start it and they run it. Yeah, absolutely. I'm in it. I'm in. Let's go.
But you doing the whole thing?
But no, we're not at that level. We don't have, there's not, I haven't run into somebody else like that.
Yeah. All right. All right.
So,
I can live with that. The, this just in from a friend of ours. Flights grounded at U.S. military base in Djibouti, and the military exercise that was ongoing has been canceled. The government of Djibouti grounded all U.S. military flights on Wednesday at a base crucial to U.S. Fighting terror in Yemen and Somalia after mishaps with two aircraft in as many days, according to three DOD officials. Both aircraft were participating in Alligator Dagger, an annual amphibious exercise in the region. The U.S. military announced Thursday that it has now canceled the remainder of the exercise. On Tuesday, a Harrier jet crashed as it was taking off from the African nation's Ambouli International Airport. The pilot ejected is in stable condition. No injuries on the ground. On Wednesday, a CH-53 helicopter suffered structural damage during a landing in Arda Beach. No one was injured, according to Commander Bill Urban, spokesman for U.S. Naval Forces Central Command. There's about
four. Oh, and then Thunderbird went down.
Yeah, and the pilot was killed yesterday.
Yeah.
So yeah, not a good couple of days. So, I had a question for you before I let you go, and I can't remember what it was. I know. Do you remember Repo?
Yeah, I remember Repo.
Forward Air Control or Air Officer,
yeah.
For 2-9.
Air Officer.
All right. Guy was good at what he did. He's a good dude. So anyway, I'm trying to get him to come on, but talking to another friend of ours, I won't mention his name, but he bit on an April Fool's joke the Marine Corps put out on their Twitter feed. I'm gonna read you what he wrote. So we all are in this this text window, okay? So under the guise of be careful what you put out in public, right? This is from our friend. Did you just hear that the Marine Corps is changing drill instructor to drill sergeant? Now, he's got a tour on the drill field. Neither Mike or I do. I'm so disappointed and pissed. Why don't we just put U.S. Army on our uniform or DOD so we're all the same? So sick of this continued effort to lower the Marine Corps standards and uniqueness to be more like the others. Our special and cut above is what makes us different and why I'm so proud to be a Marine. So, first of all, you hear that, and it's kind of like the Fred Rogers killed 22 people in Vietnam. Like, to quote Mike, what? We're going to do what? You can't change the color of the paint on the parking stalls at the recruit depot without a huge debate in the Marine Corps. So I put in there, where did you hear that? And with that, our buddy sends a picture of the from the Twitter account. U.S. and this is from the official Marine Corps Twitter account on April 1st. Goodbye, drill sergeant. Hello, goodbye, drill instructor. Hello, drill sergeant. The term drill instructor will be replaced with drill sergeant beginning next quarter in an effort to streamline training across the ground forces of the Department of Defense. And then there's a little link, right? So
yeah,
he didn't click on the link. You click on the link and there's this picture of a drill instructor with a rifle in his hand, a staff sergeant with his eyes bugging out of his head, screaming at a recruit. Say with above it, it says April Fools exclamation mark. Say aye, sir. So I'm talking to him. He was talking about, he said, hey, what do you think? Repo's a Harrier guy. Now, Harriers are also called Scariers because it's a single engine aircraft. And the engine sits right in the middle of the fuselage. So when somebody shoots a heat seeking missile at that aircraft, it goes center mass. The heat on an F-18, a dual jet, right? That goes to the back end of the aircraft, and they can survive a hit. So there's a lot of differences between the AV-8, and so now you're going to have more. The F-35 is a single engine aircraft, right? And so we're going to get Repo on to talk about that. But Marine Corps all in on an over the water single engine aircraft, and our F-18 guy, in spite of his being duped by the Marine Corps Twitter feed, he doesn't think that's a good idea. Any thoughts on it, Mike?
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Aviation stuff.
Aviation shit. All right, what else you got going today?
What did I got going on today? What's my calendar say?
You don't know?
Not much today. Oh, I got the class with the police today.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
What are you teaching the police?
Oh no, it's like a citizens academy. So you learn about what they go through and stuff, and you go through it. And they're trying to, you got to go through this part, and then after that, then I can start helping them with stuff.
Oh, no kidding. Well, that sounds cool.
Yeah, it's cool. And it's fun.
All right. Did the Red Sox play tonight? Is that your scanner? I don't know. You're like, all of a sudden you became a baseball fan. We weren't even going to talk about baseball forever.
I know.
All of a sudden,
no,
now,
weekend,
we got to start.
They're playing in an hour against the Rays again.
All right. No, against the Rays? The Rays just play the Yankees. Oh, now they're
okay.
Now they're going to Boston.
It's freaking baseball, dude. They're going to play them six more times.
Hey, no reason to get angry. No reason to get angry.
But did you see that? That game was good, though. You know what was even better? You know what made my whole day?
What?
Ask me what made my whole day.
What made your whole day, Mike?
Was when I gave you that little gift, and it said this guy, and he's like kissing his finger and putting it out there as a win. And I said, 5-1.
I know.
And he came back and said, no cheating, it's 4-1. And I was like,
dude. I know, you got me the rain out. I thought there's no, they hadn't played more games than the Yankees did, but they had.
They had. They played one more
game. I know.
Game.
And when you corrected me, I went, damn it.
Son of a bitch was right.
Exactly. But just by us talking baseball, we spread a little. How about Montana Man throwing the victim card out? Well, I've been saving calves, and I just laid down on the floor, and that's why I don't know where the Red Sox are. Shut up, man. If you're a fan, suck it up. Right?
Saving calves.
Exactly. Saving calves. Yeah, he played the
If an animal needs a human to intervene, to save its life.
Yeah,
and that's Darwin speaking.
Yeah, something ain't right. Something ain't right. He needs
to evolve.
Yeah, but he better be involved, because when you're raising them, and you're part of the component that screwed it up, yeah?
Yeah, it is. You're part of that whole, and it's
You better intervene.
Got to make money, man. Got to keep those little guys alive.
I know. Or, all right. What?
Or you call the butcher and you have veal.
Mike chimed that in, by the way.
Yeah. Silver lining, man. Everything's got a silver lining.
He chimed that in. All right. That'll do
all
it.
All right, man. I'll let you go.
All right. Have a good one.
Yep. Bye.
There he is. Mr. Fun himself, Michael Musselman. Yeah, you know what? Again, before you whoop the TMI thing on your spouse or girlfriend and alienate her for life, feel free to how do I say this? Feel free to make it fun. Okay? Feel free to make it fun. And if you don't do that, you're really asking for trouble. All right. On a Thursday, that'll do it. If you're just joining the program, whatever you do, do not touch that dial, because you're in store for a wonderful program. You're going to hear H.R. McMaster. Oh, did I just miss a phone call? Oh, Montana Man called. We'll find out what he's got going on before.
What's going on?
Why are you calling me?
Because I heard you all babbling on about what I've been doing and why I can't spend the time hunting for a Red Sox game on the TV.
Why are you playing the victim card on us? That didn't go over very well.
It was simple. You all were watching the game. All you had to do was text the number, and it would have saved me time.
Sorry. We didn't. Obviously, you saw how far that got you.
Yeah, that didn't go anywhere.
So it's snowing today up in Montana?
Yeah, it's snowing, and cold and wet is the problem. So calves are hitting the ground wet, and they're not able to dry out. So we're in scurrying around. I'm trying to send you a picture of one I had in the pickup trying to dry it out.
You had her
not going through.
You had her in the $80,000 pickup?
Oh, hell no. No, in the ranch truck.
Oh, the ranch truck.
I had two of them in there at one point this morning, sitting on one, driving with the door open to try and get to the shop where we got a big kennel set up with a heater in it to dry them out.
You think they're going to die?
Yes, they can't dry out. Once you get them dry... Like, we'll have them in here for an hour or two, get them dried out, put a little colostrum in them, and then zip them back out and find their mom again and stick them back on her, and they should be good.
Oh, really? What? So how are they getting wet?
Well, they come out wet. It's wet inside a cow.
Oh,
so they
these
start
are
wet.
I didn't know. Well, you didn't say they were newborns.
Oh, yeah. Once they get, these just hit the ground, a couple hours ago. So you got to get them dry first, and once you get them dry, then off they go.
Well, so these are the ones that you were trying to save on, let's say, Tuesday?
No, that was the whole different bunch. Those were the ones that hit the ground on Tuesday. These hit the ground this morning. Early.
Why do you have so many? What kind of operation are you running up there? Why are you do you need the interns up there? What's going on?
Well, my brother-in-law is here helping
out. Oh, well, obviously it ain't going very well. You might want to boot him in his ass.
Well, I can't change the weather. I just can't do it. So
we're not talking about that. We're talking about booting your brother-in-law. Is it your brother or your brother-in-law?
Brother-in-law.
Okay. All right. So you said that this guy, he's like a former colonel, yes?
Yeah, he's in the shop now warming a calf, listening to you berate him.
Well, if he's the assistant and all these calves are hitting the ground like nickels off a bar on a Friday night, what is going on? Is it your failure to supervise? His failure to perform? I'm not sure that we're trying to get a...
It's just a tough time to have a cow baby is what it is. I mean, all for the last month, when it's been 40 degrees and dry... We don't have to do anything. They just plop out. Stand
so
up,
you all got fat, dumb, and happy. So between the two of you, you guys are 06 and 05. You guys are like 011, and just shit's hitting the floor everywhere. And, yeah. And you wonder why Lance Corporals think officers are jacked up.
Yeah, even 011 cannot make a cow come out dry.
In 011. All right. Just wondered why you were dorking it up. And so, good luck up there. I hope everything works out for you guys.
Yeah, it's part of it. Normally in operations that calve in January, February, like most of the folks around us in Idaho do, I mean, somebody's sitting there staring at cows 24/7 during the calving season. They'll hire a guy at night with a spotlight, and he drives around waiting for him to flop out into a snowbank, and then picks them up, throws them in the pickup, gets them dried off. If they're bad enough, get some colostrum in them, and then shoot them back out to mom and let her do her thing.
And that's how it works?
Yeah, and uh-huh. It's all based on making a bigger cow by fall. So you have, you know, the earlier you calve, the longer that cow is putting on pounds. You're getting paid by the pound. So a lot of people take the risk and try and calve early so they can sell a heavy calf. But we kind of went in the middle of that, so we wouldn't have this problem. We've only had 2 days of it. So we don't have to do it every night, just on shitty nights. Like tonight's going to be another night of probably sleeping on the shop floor and driving around.
Oh, my God, not that. Well, get a blanket. I mean, last time I almost thought, like, where's the violin music with this wine, man? Holy shit. Who is this? I thought somebody else got your phone. I'm like, hey, if you don't get Schwarz's phone back, I'm calling the cops right now. They're going to GPS on your ass.
So it was every time I'd start to doze off on the floor, that calf laying next to me start bawling and kicking. She didn't make it.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, she got too cold early on, and she must have just dropped when we left the pasture, so she was probably out there for an hour and a half, 2 hours in the snow, and it was 9 degrees wet, so it's kind of hard to recover from that.
Wow.
And we couldn't get her heated up fast enough, and she didn't make it. But all the ones today, we're on them pretty good. I just sent one back out, and I'll probably send this one back out here in an hour after it stands up and gets its belly dry. And hopefully we don't have any more, and if they do, we put enough hay out that they can drop them in the hay and don't walk off into a snowbank and dump it off there. Cows aren't real bright that way, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't like when calves die. That bothers me. Call it the Disney in me. I don't like that.
Yeah, no, it's kind of shitty, and it's evidently because we had that calf at the vet, and when we went back to get the body, there was four other ones there. It was like freaking, that was a hell night for everyone in the area, I guess. So you do what you can.
All right. Anything else on the agenda for today?
Watching. There was, but now it's going to be driving around watching calves. Yeah. Mike says, you didn't think you had a heart. So you wouldn't.
Who, me?
Yeah.
Oh, really? That's how we're going to play this game? All right. All right, no, I don't like that stuff, man. Animals, it sucks. So,
yeah, especially when you nurse them all night and do everything you can.
Yeah, so unfuck yourself, man. Get the 011, maybe you need an 012, man. What is, you guys aren't smart enough to figure this shit out.
It happens. That's why you have a bunch of them.
Oh, shit. All right, well, good luck.
All right, man, thanks.
All right, later. Montana man and his capable assistant, the Colonel, up there doing the Lord's work in Montana. All right. Pentagon's having a press conference, evidently, shortly about the deployment of National Guard troops to the border, which will be the third consecutive president to have done such a thing. For the same exact reasons. But Donald Trump in a bit of a pickle because he can't deliver the wall. He's delivering 1.8 million on a wall, and that's all he can get. And evidently there's not going to be anything coming in the foreseeable future. So So we've heard maybe he'll use DOD funds to do it. Yeah. Army's got all kinds of money. Yeah, clip it from them. Navy needs theirs. They're repairing ships. $600 million to repair those ships. Yeah. Coming out of somebody's paycheck, too. Going to be... That's an allotment that's going to go for a while. Yeah, you might want to tell your wife, what's this $600 a month for? Yeah, it's just down payment on the $600 million I owe. They're going to keep me on active duty till I'm 100. And take my life insurance, which that will get your wife involved in it. What? Yeah, exactly. But all right, have a good day. This program repeats itself momentarily, so don't touch that dial. We'll see you tomorrow. The chef's going to join us tomorrow, and we're going to talk about brisket. Yeah, there's a big brisket controversy here recently where the gunner got taken to task because he's a foodie for wrapping his brisket in foil. So we're going to talk about cooking a brisket. So the All Marine Radio head chef appears for the first time in a month. He's been sick. So I talked to him yesterday. Man up, dude. So he's going to try to do that. Have a good day. We'll see you tomorrow.